Our strength comes from resiliency, and the fundamental foundations of being Jewish, I think, are to not be afraid even when we should be.
God was hoisted before the world.
What does it mean, fight back? We have a long fight ahead of us.
Here I am.
Here I am.
Here we are.
Here I am.
Here I am with Shai Davidai.
My guest today is a comic and a media CEO, and I am sure that each and every one of the people listening in or watching this on YouTube have seen at least one video of his going around the country and around the world and talking with people about everything that's happening right now in Gaza, in Israel, and in New York City and around the country. So here I am with Zach Sage Fox and his dog Ziggy.
And my dog Ziggy. What's up, guys?
Hey, Zach. So nice to see you. I also love like the energy you bring into a room.
Appreciate it.
You just bring like this energy into
a room. I'm a happy guy.
Are you a happy guy?
Oh, super happy. Yeah.
It shows. Shows. Like even when you are talking about serious stuff,
yeah,
which we will probably and we'll get to, and I've seen you like MC rallies and like even before and after really serious speeches, you find a way not to make light of things, but to just make it palatable for people.
Yeah, because the world's always been kind of crappy, right? Like, it's not like, you know, I try to broaden the perspective. One thing, you're lucky if you're even like a living cell on this earth, you know, like it's you're lucky to be alive. Most people throughout human history died at a very young age. Most women died at childbirth. Most babies died as babies. And most people used to get slaughtered without any kind of laws around them at all, which we'll obviously talk about in the Jewish Civil Rights podcast. But I do try to broaden my perspective. And obviously, it's an awful time to be a Jew. But in some ways, it's one of the best times to be a Jew when you really, really broaden out the horizon. We do have civil rights. They're not all as sturdy and strong as they should be. But, you know, this isn't, the Spanish Inquisition anymore either. So.
Right. Yeah, and that's an extremely important thing, because there's the conversation, and I guess we'll get a lot to talking about the broader conversation, but the conversation happening in the world is either Jews have nothing to complain about, and they are, you know, they have never been oppressed by anyone in history, and et cetera, or Jews are the, you know, suffering the worst that could ever happen, and it's complex. Everything is complex. But Zach, I start every episode with a simple yet profound question. Zach Sage Fox, what kind of a Jew are you?
Ooh. A ballsy Jew, I would say. I would say a Jew with not trembling knees. Uh-huh. My knees are very sturdy.
What is that? How does that come about in your day-to-day life?
Yeah, I'm just a strong Jew, I think. I think both my parents hate each other, but they really loved me and really, I think, taught me to be a strong person in general. And I just was raised to have a backbone, and I was raised to stand up to authority and to question authority and to question the rules around me. And I was taught where I came from, I think. So I think I'm very aware of my background and how tied to Jewish persecution that is. And, you know, all of my ancestors, like almost every Jew, right, especially the ones in America, you know, our stories are all very similar. We were all persecuted into taking the trip to Ellis Island. And so, you know, I knew that things had been really bad for Jews. I knew they could get bad again. I was a bit asleep at the wheel, to be honest, about how bad things could get. But when 10/7 happened, I just felt in my DNA, this is the moment to be super strong. This is the moment to show what being Jewish means and to show that we are resilient. That we're just a resilient people, and that our strength comes from resiliency, And the fundamental foundations of being Jewish, I think, are to not be afraid even when we should be. And that's very difficult at times, but, you know, strength begot strength. And like I said, I think my parents gave me a lot of strength. I was very much told I could do and be anything I wanted and my whole life. And I was pushed to follow my dreams by my whole family. And yeah, I was taught to take chances and to not be a coward in the face of cowardice, I guess.
So, and we'll get to that. We'll get specifically to like how you've channeled that ballsiness.
Yeah.
And I think ballsiness is like the best word. Like that's a perfect word to describe what you've been doing since October 7th. But before you were out there in the streets doing what you're doing for your Jewish identity, your Jewish people, what was your fight against authority?
Yeah.
How did your courage kind of like your braveness?
Yeah. Yeah. I'll tell you a story. I don't think I've told on camera before, but you know, I have terrible ADHD, like the worst ADHD a human being could have. I don't know how much that comes across in these short videos people are seeing of me, but my brain is
maybe
just
that's
like,
why we're so short.
Yeah. Yeah. My brain is all over the fucking place. So it's like, I was really like that as a kid. You know, very quickly I get into school, and starting around first grade, I started being put in all the bottom classes. And my mom really, really fought the administration and just said, this kid is really smart. He should be in the top classes and you're just not seeing him for what he is. He just needs extra time, to calm his brain. But if you actually give him the time he needs, he's going to get all the answers right. And so I actually watched my mom fight the administration. I was at a public school for kindergarten and first grade, and she fought them and moved my school, her and my father, they moved me to a Jewish day school so that they could get me in normal classes. And they specifically went to a Jewish day school, one, because I was being bullied for multiple reasons, fat, Jewish. But, you know, also really they weren't acknowledging my learning disabilities and helping me thrive with those disabilities. You know, ADHD is like a gift if you learn how to harness it. And so I just saw at a very young age that like they're not always right. You know, the people that are sitting in the principal's chair and the people that have the position of power, they don't always know what they're talking about. And I really do actually, I think that was extremely impactful because.
And it worked. You made it all the way to Penn.
Yeah,
which
I did.
Before October 7th would have been.
Yeah, it would have been awesome.
Wow, you went into Penn. Now it's like, okay, you went into Penn.
No, but, you know, yeah. Which encampment were you in instead of dorm?
But no, but it's still an incredible school despite it's losing its path.
Yeah, totally. But yeah, those are some early lessons. And yeah, both my parents just really taught me to question authority, and they gave me the ego of a lion. Yeah, they just kept always told me how awesome I was, and that if other people don't think you're awesome, that doesn't mean they're right. And yeah, so I think some of those early lessons, and then also seeing it, it's like, oh, wow, they were right. Like they got me into these smarter classes, and look, I'm getting all A's once I had the extended time accommodations that I need on all this stuff. So I really, really did get to actually see that when you stand up to authority, that authority can be completely wrong. And I think those were super important lessons to see at a young age.
Yeah, I think that's super interesting. I think I got to the exact same point, but through a very different path.
Yeah, yeah. How?
Because for me, I've always been against authority when I thought the authority was wrong. I have no problem with authority. I respect everyone, every person, no matter what. I don't respect you just because you have authority over it.
Really?
Over me. I respect you for who you are. But when I think you're wrong, I don't care if you're my teacher, my principal, I will call you out. And my parents never told me that it's okay to call them out, but they said, if you do it and you are right, we'll have your back.
Interesting.
And they did. They had my back. When I called out teachers for doing things that were wrong, my parents had my back. When I called out teachers for things my parents disagreed with, they're like, you're on my you're on, man.
Yeah.
So
my parents weren't so, they're just like a blank slate. I was the first child too on both sides of my family. So I think like I could also just do no wrong. I was like perfect.
Nice.
Yeah. Which like I don't know if that's always the
best.
No.
You're nice.
I'm sure I got many detentions too that I probably did deserve and that my parents just blindly sided with me.
I love that. I love that. But so again, we're kind of like wanna risk-free your childhood, and because you had some interesting stories there, but What is Fat Camp Films?
Yeah.
What's the story there?
Yeah, it's actually the craziest origin story ever. Okay, so speaking of that Jewish day school. So I get to that Jewish day school. I was still the fat kid in my grade, but, you know, a much smaller grade. So I wasn't getting bullied anymore. It was like day and night, by the way. One of the things I look back on and I feel like made me one of the people I am today really is going to Jewish day school. I went from this public high school where I was literally, there were kids who didn't want to be friends with me because I was Jewish. And just a ton of bullying and just nonconformity in general. And then going to Jewish day school, it's like my whole life changed overnight. You know, I got there my first week at Jewish high school, might have been my third day, was 9/11. I was 7 years old, second grade.
Wow.
And so really quickly, by the way, you felt like what it meant to be at a Jewish day school, because all of a sudden it wasn't just like, I don't know, I could be wrong. Maybe parents were picking their kids up and freaking out at every school. But being at a Jewish day school, every parent was freaking out and picking their kid up almost immediately out of fear that a Jewish organization like that could totally be a target in this, you know, radical Islamic fight that Al-Qaeda
was. Right, because people kind of forget that Bin Laden, you know, had two targets, America and
Jews,
Israel.
Yeah, and Jews. And
as he was attacking America, there were already other people saying the Jews were attacking America. So the Jews at the time were attacked on both fronts.
Yeah, we did 9/11. Sorry, guys. ridiculous. But yeah, but so I really felt it. And that unity, I think, immediately, too, it was a very interesting time to start to chase. It was like literally my second day, third day of class. And it was very, you know, we were talked about it like that, too. Like, I remember we literally got in a circle and our principal sat us around and explained to us, too, that as Jews, we could be targets and that a lot of people's parents were instructed to come pick them up early. But so at that Jewish day school, my life changed very quickly. I was still the heavy kid in my grade, but I went from having like no friends to being like the funny fat kid. And the fattest kid in the grade above me, and me, Omri, we had siblings in the same grade. So when we were maybe I was in fifth grade, he was sixth or fourth or fifth or something like that. Our siblings had a play date. And on that play date, Omri's mom tells my mom that she's sending him to fat camp. And
what is fat camp?
It's a real thing. Our fat camp did get shut down eventually. It got shut down like 3 years ago. They say because of COVID, but I guess we'll never know. With Ozempic, I guess you don't need it anymore. but it's literally like a weight loss summer camp. And so I'd gone to a regular summer camp the summer before, and I actually got bullied for being fat again. It was this constant theme in my life. And my mom wanted me to go. And honestly, I really wanted to go. I always joke I was sent, but I was super insecure about it. And so I went to this fat camp, and my future business partner and I, we're in the same bunk, and we really shared this love there of movies and wanting to make movies. This was summer of 2006. So this was the summer YouTube came out. Little did we even know about it yet. So we're sitting there talking about this idea of starting a production company called Fat Camp Films.
Wait, when you were what? 12. You were talking about starting a production company?
Yeah, I knew what I wanted to do.
I was talking about girls.
Yeah,
you were way
advanced. I was talking about girls. No.
Okay, you were way advanced with me.
Yeah. Fat Camp was like, I have a joke in my stand-up where I talk about how it's like basically like the fat of like the obese Avengers. You know, it's like all the fattest kids from their elementary, middle schools like coming together. You know, to like save calories but everybody hooks up because it's like, you know, the playing field's completely even. So like when you're at Fat Camp, there's no such thing as a fat kid. It's everybody's just kids. So everybody hooked up. I had my first makeout and spin the bottle, water bottle, obviously. It was the first time I looked at boob, girl's boob. I always emphasize. So it was both. But yeah, Omri and I, we talked about making movies one day, and we're both from Pennsylvania. And this was really before the word influencer was 10 years away from even being talked about. So I hadn't met anyone who wanted to go into film and TV. And my business partner was like this perfect blend. Like he wanted to direct. I wanted to act and write. He wanted nothing to do with being on camera. I was the attention whore.
That's why you're here and he isn't.
Yeah, that's why I'm here. And he's quietly sitting in his apartment with AC. Yeah, he's the best. But it is funny. So, but we talked about this dream. We would literally keep the bunk up like at night watching like DVDs on our portable DVD player that we snuck in, watching like Borat. Napoleon Dynamite was the big movie of the summer. Maybe Borat. I think Borat. No. This was maybe before Borat. I mean, anyway, it was like summer 2006. Yeah. It was like that Apatow era. There was a lot of great comedy back then. And we bonded really over the idea of making movies and starting this company called Fat Camp Films. little did we realize we'd get back from summer camp and literally we started hearing about YouTube. And so all of a sudden this concept of like, maybe you can be making videos soon, like it really became a reality within a year kind of getting back from camp. And so, you know, we started a YouTube channel when I was 14, brought Omri into it. We called it Fat Camp Films. And by the time we were 17, we got a development deal with Disney Channel.
What was the first video you two made?
First video too. It was always the same thing. I've been running around with a microphone, shoving a camera in people's faces literally since I was like 13, 14. Like you can type in videos of me on YouTube and literally see me doing a much worse job of what I'm doing now with like the same shtick. Really always the same stuff. And then eventually we got into higher production stuff, skits and everything. But the stuff I'm doing now is the beginning of what I did. And we always did it that way because when you're first starting off, I switched then eventually from Jewish day school. In ninth grade, I switched to public school specifically so I could have access to camera equipment because my public school had a great film program on the district access channel. They had a film studio. So all of the videos originally I would rent out from my school because it was just flip phones. There wasn't a way to film your iPhone or anything.
That's incredible.
Yeah, so we were really right at the beginning of it all, having no clue where the internet was going to go. We always saw it as a stepping stone into film and television. Little did we realize we'd get into film and TV only for film and TV to shrink and the internet to just expand into what it's become.
And we'll get to what you've been doing as like the activist arm, yeah. But right now, what does Fat Camp Films do?
Yeah, we're like a real multimedia studio. I think that's one of the things I'm the most proud of. There was a lot of people who gave us advice early on, which was that you need to focus on one thing. You know, look at James Wan's production company. He only does horror. Look at Judd Apatow. He only does comedy. You know, look at that company. They only do reality TV shows. And Omri and I both have ADHD. We're both all over the place. We have, and we like a lot of different stuff. Like we'll watch dating shows, you know, with a girl, and we'll watch, you know, and like a bag of popcorn, and we'll go to the movies and watch a horror film. We just like a lot of stuff. And then we also just felt like the older people giving us that advice didn't understand that media was about to become so fragmented. And we always felt like having a multimedia approach was smart. And so we did two things at once, basically. So we got this development deal with Disney Channel. We were super young. So we had our first credits for Fat Camp Films when we were like 17 years old. And we got to produce a big prank show. So our first big credit was literally a Disney Channel original prank show that I hosted out of Montreal. It's not on Disney Plus, by the way, because it was an acquisition from this show called Just for Laughs. So it's like it was a Canadian show, yeah, technically, that they Americanized. But we were the writers on it, producers. I was the host. And it was amazing. And then from there, we took all the material that we wanted to do. Like, you know, we were doing really edgy stuff. So it was actually crazy. We even got on Disney. It was nuts. I don't think that would happen today. Like, we were doing really raunchy stuff. Like, literally, I did a video called, like, Hanukkah Fairy Goes to Compton. And I went, are you done? You can leave.
Just for people not watching in, Ziggy, your dog was on your lap your entire moment. Now
he's
left.
Out. If there's a jump cut,
oh, that's okay. Bye, listen. Ziggy.
Bye, buddy. Get out of here. but yeah, we were doing really edgy stuff. I did a video like Christmas in Israel. Like we always had Jewish kind of stuff, but edgy stuff. So, and all the R-rated stuff we couldn't get on Disney Channel, we then took and we wrote into a full-length feature film. Then we moved the company from LA. Neither one of us loved living in LA. Both of our families are on the East Coast. And I hadn't gone to college yet. So I was like 20 years old when the Disney stuff ended. And I was like, I got all those A's I should probably go somewhere. So I got into UPenn. We moved the company back to the East Coast, really started getting gigs in New York. And then, you know, Philadelphia too, as branded content really took up. We became like big content partners with GoPuff, who had the CEO, one of them had also gone to our Jewish day school.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so it was a good, so, and basically that's where things started. So then we started making movies and TV and really focusing on branded content for big companies at the same time. We just took all the media opportunities we could get. We didn't care if people judged us for doing, you know, influencer advertising while we were making features. To us, content was content and we should have our hands in as much of it as possible. So essentially, we take all our raunchy content right into this big feature film. While I'm at UPenn, this reality TV producer, this amazing woman named Nancy Glass, came to speak at Penn. And I'm just crazy and think I could do whatever I set my mind to. And I ran up to her and I was like, hey, my name is Zach Fox. I wasn't using my middle name yet at the time. I was like, I'm Zach Fox. I have this feature length film. It's a teen comedy, you know, like super bad. And she was like, I make reality shows. You know, that's not my, I'm not looking to do that. And I was like, well, it's the funniest script you've ever read. Just read it. And if you still feel that way, don't hit me up. Here's my card. And I gave her the script. And like 3 weeks later, she emails me and was like, you were right. That's the funniest script I've ever read. And then summer before my senior year, we were on set shooting this like $1 million movie. Yeah, I was 22, directed it, wrote the whole thing. Yeah, a bunch of my favorite comedians and celebrities. For David Koechner from The Office and Anchorman's in it. Kate Flannery, who plays Meredith in The Office, plays my mom. Chris Kattan from SNL. Chris Elliott from Schitt's Creek. And there's something about Mary. And yeah, so it was great. So then we made this big feature film while we were doing all this branded stuff for companies like Pioneer Ray-Bans, GoPuff, Kickstarter. And so, yeah, we were just really building this multimedia media company. And so, yeah, then when I went to UPenn, we officially moved the company to New York City. And we've just done two things at once. So we have a new show in development with Max. We, you know, have a new full-length feature documentary we're producing. And, you know, we're out pitching shows and films all the time while also still working with big brands and, yeah, making viral videos for them.
And at the same time, now we get to October 7th, you decide not to shift your focus, but to add to your focus.
Yes.
Maybe the ADHD comes handy. to creating the same kind of edgy, attractive, engaging content, but about Israel and about Jewish people. Weren't you afraid that you would hurt your business?
It's
like,
funny.
You have a machine, a well-oiled machine. You and Omri, I know Omri's Israeli. Jewish, but why?
You know, it's funny. Everybody asks me that, and my question is like, why aren't more celebrities? Why aren't more? I don't get why everyone else isn't doing it. It's like, to me, it was so obvious after October 7th that, you know, this isn't a black and white situation, but it's close. Like, this, you know, Hamas is an actual genocidal, evil terrorist organization that says explicitly in their charter they want to kill all Jews. It's not just about Israel, it's about all Jews. It's like the top of their founding document.
How dare you take them at their own words?
Yeah, how dare I? It just seems so obvious. And, you know, it's funny. So I really, I'll tell you my thinking about it. I remember, and it's been a progress, by the way. It wasn't like, you know, now I've become this big face of this thing. It was like, you know, a slow walk. But essentially my thinking was, on October 7th, I was so nervous, but I think I felt satisfaction, or not satisfaction, but I felt relief in knowing how many Jewish celebrities there were and how many Jewish titans of business there were and just how many important Jews there were in the world, disproportionate to our very tiny size. And I felt comfort in that because I'm like, hey, this is the moment that, you know, all of our ancestors were persecuted out of their shtetls in Europe or out of their homes in the Middle East and other parts of the world. We all have the same story. We were all kicked out of somewhere until eventually we landed in a place where we weren't. And so I'm so aware of that, and that my family went to insane lengths to get to this country for that freedom. My great-grandfather, who I got to meet, he was young when I died, but he was around till I was like six or so. He was like, he literally left his shtetl in Romania, which I think is like modern day Transylvania, where he's from. I'm part vampire. But yeah, now like Romania, Transylvania. He left at 13 years old. Like, literally, he was bar mitzvahed. They sent him on a boat to come to this country, his parents, because things were that bad for Jews. And this was, keep in mind, this was in like the 20s. This is like several decades before the Holocaust. That's how bad things were getting. The Holocaust didn't just happen in a, you know, it didn't, what does Kamala Harris say? It didn't just fall off a coconut tree. You know what I mean? It's like, it had all this buildup to it. And so I, you know, my great grandfather comes at 13, gets denied. The U.S. government has all these quotas. They're not letting in a lot of Jews. So he goes to Brazil at 13 years old, starts his own business, schleps around a food cart with, you know, fruit and stuff. And, you know, he's staying with an aunt or uncle or something he has there until 10 years later, he can finally come back and get sponsored to come to America. And he comes in the middle of the Great Depression. I mean, so it's just like, and all my family has some version of that story. And so it's just like, I'm so grateful that I get to be Jewish here and that I even get to be here. And I know how the lengths that my family all came to be here. And I know that they came here so that one day, if something like the Holocaust ever happened again, that their kin would have the ability to speak up and would have the heart to speak up and the passion to speak up for what's right and what's wrong. And so I knew that about myself. And I know that so many of these other Jewish celebrities like Adam Sandler, Nick Kroll, like they all these people, like the list goes on and on. Natalie Portman, like there's so many Jews in not only Hollywood, but just like in the arts in general that have built followings and names for themselves. And so I felt like, yes, we're small, but we're going to speak up right now and we're going to make sure that people know how bad October 7th was and how supportive we are of the Jewish state. Even if you don't agree with everything, you don't have to agree with every details of the Jewish state to agree that it deserves to exist and that Jews need a home of protection and a safe haven. And so I really felt it in my bones that we were going to be okay. And then October 8th happens. Barely any celebrities. 9th happens. Barely any celebrities say anything. October 10th, barely any Jewish celebrities say anything. And so I just am sitting there. I'm like, I am in a position where I run a production company, so I can't be fired. No one can fire me. I get to decide.
Well, but you can lose a lot of money. You can lose your branding.
Yes, but I can find money and I can find clients. So okay. It puts me in a slightly different position, right? I'm not somebody who can get fired, right? I'm only somebody like... No, I'm at the end of the day, I'm going to be CEO of my company no matter what. And my business partner is going to be CEO of our company. And there's a million people to work with. So why do we want to work with people who don't want to work with us? If they don't like Jews, why do we want to work with them? So our thinking was, let's partner up with some Jewish nonprofits. Let's just build a roster. We'd worked with nonprofits in the past on voting campaigns, a lot of big bipartisan get out the vote campaigns. And so we started seeking out like-minded clients, people that could you know, fund some of the ideas we had. And, you know, now we're working with several Jewish nonprofits. And I don't think we've lost business. Business is booming for us. Like, we're still doing well. Like, which reminds me that if you do the right, you know, my follower count's increased. Like, and it's not to brag. It's to say, like, when you do the right thing, I do think the right thing will happen to you, even if it doesn't feel like that in the moment. And seeing the success we've been able to maintain from speaking out, it just makes me more frustrated that more people don't.
But you're relatively young in the business.
Yeah.
But you've also started young, so you've been around. You know, not all of them, but you know many of these people. Why do you think they are not speaking up? And by the way, I'm not letting off the non-Jews off the hook.
Yeah.
Because they have spoken up about other issues.
Yeah.
Let's put them aside for a second. Why are the Adam Sandlers, Natalie Portman, like the people that you mentioned, not speaking up?
They're afraid.
But they, you know, they have their own production companies. They have enough money to be fired 10 times over.
I don't get it. Here's the deal. Like, Adam Sandler, if you're watching this, I love you, dude. You're like one of my biggest idols ever. I know you're pro-Israel. He's like literally made the Zohan. Like, he's a big Zionist, Adam Sandler.
Of course. Nobody. I don't doubt that.
He was the highest paid actor of last year, of 2020. The highest paid. Every actor in the world. He made like $100 million from his Netflix deal. So he doesn't even have to sell tickets anymore. Like, he's set for life. So I don't know why. It's one of the big things. I mean, what do you think? I don't know. I think about it every day. I
really don't understand it. And
by the way, I'm talking about not even just speaking up for Israel or about Israel. Why aren't they talking about the rapid hostages. Rise in anti-Semitism?
Oh,
they're not going to lose anything if they talk about, hey, these pro-Hamas rallies are horrific. Jews getting beat up in LA is horrific. Why aren't they talking about that?
Because they're not on the streets. Because
you don't think they're seeing what we're seeing?
I think if Adam Sandler donned a yarmulke and like a good beard so no one recognized it's Adam Sandler and just walked around, and not a watermelon yarmulke, an actual yarmulke, and walked around in these protests and see how it feels. If Adam Sandler's girls walked around with a big Magen David in the encampment, I think he would be on board. I don't think...
Like, you just think they don't know.
I think they don't want to know. But to me, it's like, what about the hostages? You don't have to talk about anything.
By the way, Seinfeld's your example. I think people like him more. Like, by the way, I always liked Seinfeld. I wouldn't say Seinfeld was like an idol of mine growing up for no particular reason. It just wasn't the show that I think it was a little bit before me. So it wasn't like, I always liked Seinfeld. I'm obsessed with him now. I've like gone back and started watching because I respect the shit out of that guy.
Yeah. And to me, like, Seinfeld is the exact example of someone who's never spoken up about stuff because that's not his comedy, that's not his bit. But when kids get kidnapped from their homes, he'll speak up. And he doesn't even say like, all he said like, this is wrong, period. Not like he even says, I'm a comedian, I don't know the answers, but I know what's right and what's wrong.
And imagine if every Jewish celebrity did just what he's not out there every day talking about it. This isn't his life. But when he's questioned about it, he says that what's the obvious right thing.
And all
to
of a sudden, his comedy shows go viral because he gets heckled by some anti-Semites, and he handles it so well.
Amazing.
And everybody knows that Jerry Seinfeld has a show on. Nobody knows that Adam Sandler has a new Netflix on.
Totally.
Adam, if you're watching this, two things.
Speak
up.
Yeah.
And when you make a new Hanukkah song, I want Zach in the
song.
Yeah, I want
to be in it. But no, I'd love to. Listen, I'm not trying to shame anyone. I'm not like, it's just like, they should. There's still time. Like, come speak up. But some of them totally know what's going on and they don't. Another perfect example, Amy Schumer. She's been amazing. Like,
she's been incredible.
She's been amazing. And by the way, clearly she hates Netanyahu. She's like not, she's a liberal person. But like, and she's not like going into every detail.
Sarah Silverman started speaking up.
They speak up.
Regina
exactly.
Spektor.
They're not losing anything. Their careers are fine.
Mind Bialik.
They're fine. Like the people like me, that's careers are young. We're the ones with stuff to lose. And like, I haven't lost anything. I'm telling you, I've gained on Instagram, I think I've gained over 100,000 followers, which is just a reminder of like, okay. And by the way, at the beginning, I think I lost 2,000 or 3,000 followers. Like, and then I gained which is just like, okay, cool. Like, some people who hate Jews are left me, and then I got people who loved me.
It's
like,
the
that's
same.
Fine.
It's the same as in academia.
Yeah.
Almost no professors speak up. When you hear someone speak up from a college, it's a student.
Yeah.
And those students are doing so much better than they would have.
Good.
And the professors.
Good.
So, one thing that I love about your content, and we'll talk about the content you're creating now, is that it seems like you really get Gen Z.
Yeah.
You really get Gen Z, and you know how to make things engaging. But you also know when you go and speak with them in the man on the street kind of videos, you understand how they think.
Yeah.
So before we get to your content, these keffiyeh-clad...
Yeah.
White kid from Wisconsin, Gen Zers.
Yeah.
Right? How did they get to that point?
Yeah. I think I'm actually a perfect person to explain this to because I have a footprint on TikTok. So I have a couple million followers on TikTok. I built those followers with my cute little dog you just saw jump down. Largely like during the, you know, post-COVID when like TikTok was really booming. I knew it was Chinese owned, but like whatever. It was the thing to do. I would have been an idiot not to be on TikTok. You know, I'm a comedian. I look Gen Z. I'm a millennial. I'm 30. I'm aging, I think, nicely. But yeah, you look. Everybody,
very,
it's funny.
Very nicely.
When people meet me now, too, they're like, are you like a college student? Are you editing these videos in your dorms? I'm like, bitch, please, I got a company.
To be fair, you had a company when you were in college.
Yeah, that's true. But I do look really. When I was on Disney, by the way, I don't know if I said, I was playing like, I was like 18 when I was on air, playing like 10. Like, I was like their dream child.
People are surprised to hear that I'm 41. So
yeah, you know. You look young too. It's a Jew gene.
You know what? It's. Fighting anti-Semites,
young, for your skin.
It's great for your skin.
It helps your college.
If Adam Sandler, if only that reason,
so
you know, you look so young,
look so good,
you can do Zohan too, so if unreal. Only you fight anti-Semites.
But yeah, so what were we talking about?
So Gen Z, how did they get to this point?
Yeah. So perfect example though, this in my video, you know, a couple million followers, videos always did very well, but I was doing like lighter, like not light stuff. Like I was doing stuff either with my dog or I was very focused on, I missed the part where after I left fat camp, I had an eating disorder and went to rehab at 13 years old. But so I'm very into mental health. So I was really focused on a lot of mental health. I have a big talk show that I sort of sunsetted. Just, I only had so much time. After 10-7, but I have this big show called What's Your Problem, where I interview people and I would answer every question, same thing. What's your problem? And it was just to get people to open up on the streets of New York, sort of like therapy on the street a little bit, and it would crush. And I had a nice, you know, following based off all this stuff. The second I started talking about Israel, videos got taken down almost immediately. And like
off TikTok.
Oh, off TikTok. Like literally there was a video I did called No Jews, No News. And like, it was like a joke. I'm literally talking in the video about how China's suppressing things on TikTok. It got taken down immediately, like within seconds. Like it was like 5 seconds. Yeah. Like they see it. I think it had, cause I talked about the Uyghurs. Like, I mean, so like there is a full, I have no doubt in my mind, a full anti-Israel, anti-America, anti-Jewish part of that algorithm that is fully, if you look at my TikTok right now, by the way, it's insane. I'll post about this to my followers, like Gaza graduation, which I think got like 15, 20 million views on my Instagram. It literally got
What's
like,
that video? Just describe it for
the
people.
One where I'm interviewing college students in the cap and gown. In the cap and gown about, you know, the protesters. I'm asking the kids who are at these protests how much they actually know about it. And I give them $100 if they get, you know, from which river to which sea. What does Antifada mean? You know, what is Zion? They don't know anything.
So you put that on TikTok and then what?
Oh, God, I think it got taken down after 5 seconds. It either got taken down or it got like 1,000 views. Like, it's a joke. It's like literally like 20 million views on Instagram, like 500 views on TikTok. It's like a literal joke. Like, it's like, it is the most clear suppression I've ever seen in my entire life. It's insane when a video doesn't get taken down. I'd say one in every three gets taken down. I don't think I've had one video break. I think one video recently on Israel got 200,000 views, and I was shocked because I don't even know if I had a video that got over 10,000 that was related to any of the stuff I've done since 10/7. So there is clear black and white suppression on that app. So they're not seeing the right information.
So what are they seeing?
They are seeing literally only the things about the Palestinian babies dying, and they're seeing awful things about Zionism.
Which are true.
Yeah, yes, but they're only seeing that part of the story. But they're also seeing things that are complete garbage, too. They're seeing tons of things that are not true also. Like, there are literally stories about, like, the dogs raping, like, IDF dogs raping Palestinians. That was rampant on TikTok. The thing about Osama bin Laden being awesome in his letter, and then the girls being like, and Osama bin Laden's kind of cute. Like, that was huge on TikTok for weeks until things started getting taken down. And a lot of that stuff's still up. So like while my videos where I'm literally like talking about anti-Semitism and like there are videos I've done where I don't even mention Israel. I'm just talking about nothing suppressed, taken down, community guidelines. And then you talk about things about Hamas and they skyrocket if it's pro-Hamas. Like literally Hamas was like live stream raising money on TikTok at the same time I had like three videos taken down in a week. And I was just like, this is insane. Like it's so blatant. It's the most blatant thing ever. I'm nervous because obviously there are some things, you know, I agree with Biden, some things I don't. But I think he did the right thing by signing the TikTok ban. But it looks like Trump, which is ironic because he pitched it, but Trump looks like he wants to undo that ban. So it's really up in the air whether this ban's going to stick. But I don't care. I have 1.2 million followers on one of my accounts, on my show account. I have another like 1. something. I would rather lose both of those and have TikTok be gone for the betterment of society. It's a bullshit app, and it's fully controlled by the CCP. I have friends who work there who tell me off the record that it's horrible and that they know the algorithm is blatantly anti-Semitic. I have friends who have left their job. I mean, this is like this is going to be a huge story that I hope journalists. They don't seem to do their job at all, by the way.
Well, because they're doing their research off of TikTok.
Yeah, they're doing their research.
Right? If a journalist is doing the research, like, I'm going to go and talk about TikTok, so I'm going to go and live on TikTok, then of course you're not going to see because you're in the matrix.
Videos, by the way, the biggest thing I'm exposing is that these kids don't know anything. Like, I would say 1/3 of them are actually, like, pretty awful human beings. I don't think anybody's born awful, so obviously something happened along the way, but they really just are filled with hate in their heart. And then the other 2/3 have no clue, and they're just seeing things that are untrue. Like the biggest thing that blows my mind is when I ask people, they call Israel is they're occupying Gaza. And then I say, you know, Israel left Gaza in 2005. I don't think I've had one Gen Zer college student who I've brought that up to who knew that Israel left Gaza in 2005, which is like mind blowing.
Like, that's like the fundamental thing you need to know.
This whole story. Yeah. And I don't think I found one of these kids, one of these people at these rallies, not one of them has heard that. That's in fucking.
So how do you keep hope in the face of stupidity?
Yeah, I'm the right guy for this, like, because I am a super happy guy. So I'm just happy, like, I have a good head on my shoulders, I think. I'm in therapy, you know, constantly. Like, it's not like I'm just happy. I work for it. And I do the therapy homework, very important. I did two, coming out of COVID, I was super depressed just after that whole massacre. I just gotten dumped by an ex-girlfriend. I was like left as a single dog. You know, so I did therapy twice. So like therapy is very important. So I really work on my mental health. There was a couple weeks I specifically went out of my way to see a therapist that specialized in anti-Semitism. I'm very like, I really don't like when things bottle up. I'm very like, I just want to really talk and address things as they come. So it's not that it's hard for me. It's just that I don't know. I think in some ways the fact that so much of it is misinformation and wrong education, that gives me a little hope that maybe if the education was changed, that things could be better. And I'll tell you moments that give me hope. There was a woman who ran up to me. I told this at the rally, but there was a woman who ran up to me in the park the other day, and she's just this older German woman. And yeah, I love when women run up to me. But it was just like, you know, it was funny. I assumed she was Jewish. Like a lot of people comment to me these days are Jewish. Then she was non-Jewish. And she's a huge fan of my videos. And she's just a Zionist from Germany. And she was saying, you know, obviously there's parts of Germany, especially Berlin, that aren't so great. But she's like, there's tons of major Zionist support in Germany. And like a moment, like it really was like, right, they were under Nazi indoctrination in this century. And look at Germany now. By the way, legally, we're talking about Jewish civil rights. They've been one of the best in Europe, from what I can read. I mean, you might know more than me, but from what I see from a surface level, look like they're doing a better job than the rest. And that's Germany. So like societies can change, people can change. And it's not like, I don't think the Nazis were born evil, they were taught evil. And so then when they were, these same people were taught good and they were taught facts and they were taught how to love, then they were able to go in that direction. And then you also look at countries like the UAE, like Saudi Arabia, like look at what happened during the Abraham Accords. There is unity with Israel from these Muslim countries, which reminds you that this isn't about Muslims versus Jews. This is about a very radical sect of Islam. And so you look at UAE and how can that not give you hope? You look at Saudi Arabia, their flag is swords. Like, yeah. What do you think those swords were largely used to kill non-Muslims? And look at them now. They're opening their doors. They're not perfect by any stretch of the imagination, but they're a country that's being reformed. And they're being reformed on how they treat and react with Jews as well. And so where I have hope is in the education system. Where I get afraid is at least this administration, the Biden administration. Keep in mind, I'm not a Democrat. I'm not a Republican. I'm a full independent. I've mostly voted for Democrats, but I voted for Republicans.
I like to say to people, I can't vote here because I'm not a citizen, but if I could, I'm not a Republican. I'm not a Democrat. I'm a Jew.
Yeah, me too. I'll vote for
100%. That's my category, Jew.
Yeah.
And I would vote to whoever helps me survive. Totally. And of course, I'm also other thing. I would vote for someone who would help my wife and daughter survive as women. And, you know, there's other stuff. It's not like
pick the candidate.
But I am a Jew.
Totally. But yeah, the Biden administration, and I voted for Joe Biden. I'm fine to say that. The Biden-Harris administration keeps talking about a two-state solution. Like all you have to do is end this war and there'll be two states tomorrow. The North Star is a two-state solution. I can't even think of another solution. Unless like Gaza goes back to Egypt and the West Bank goes back to Jordan, but I don't know how realistic that is. But I think the North Star is a two-state, but we're nowhere near ready for that. And we're nowhere near ready for that because you have to unindoctrinate these people because it's also not fair to them. Like, you know,
Let's talk about that because I want to talk about some of your videos. You made probably one of the most stupid decisions you've ever made in your life, but also the smartest because it went super viral and got the attention of the world. Which is you made a man on the street video in Ramallah, in the West Banks. Okay. First, I were you wearing your Magenda V, your Star of David?
Not. Okay. Oh my God, I took off my nail polish and was like painting my nails. I think it looks cool. Dude, I wore my most like heteronormative outfit ever, which was still like, you know, salmon pink, but
okay, and to be completely open, I have never been in Ramallah.
You couldn't, you're not allowed.
Not even like when I served in the military, I was in the Navy, which is like the farthest away you can be in Israeli military if it's not, you know, from the West Bank. What happened there? Tell me about the experience of going into Ramallah and talking with the actual people because these protesters, they speak for the Palestinians.
Yeah.
You actually went and spoke to the Palestinians.
Yeah.
Or some Palestinians.
Yeah. So it was okay. So I went to Israel to shoot a ton of content. I've had some of that release. Honestly, my thought was I'm so busy here in the States. I love Israel so much. I've been many times. But my thought was, I'm going to go on a trip and I'm going to shoot like 15 videos in like 5 days. And what's up, Ziggy? I was like, I'm going to shoot like 15 videos in 5 days and I'll just spread them out throughout the year. Because I spent a lot of time in the edits. I don't edit them. My employees edit them. But, you know, I really try to perfect them to as much as I can. So I go to Israel and my goal is just to shoot videos in Israel. I didn't think you could go to the West Bank. So I'm there and we had outsourced an Israeli film team. And I think it was like after the first day of shooting, the lead producer was like, "You're fucking nuts, man." And I was like, "I am pretty crazy." Like he just saw I was ballsy. I have this video that I don't know if it's out yet, but or I don't know if it'll be out when this comes out. It's coming out in the next week or two. But I did a video where it's called Apartheid Hunters, and I dressed up. I did like a parody of the Crocodile Hunter, and I dress up as Steve Irwin. I do a really good Australian accent, so I went on the streets, and I looked for all that apartheid I've been hearing about in Jerusalem. So I go, and I do that, and he was just like, you're crazy, man. And he was like, all right, I'm going to pitch you something. I've pitched this to some other influencers that, you know, we've worked with in Israel. Basically, I have a Muslim producer who I'm friendly with, and she can take you to Ramallah, to the West Bank, if you wanted to go. I can't go. I'm Israeli. My team can't go. They're Israeli. You wouldn't be able to have security. Keep in mind, I've had security on every video I've done since October 7th.
Including the one we did together.
Including the one we did there, except for when I went to the West Bank. Because I couldn't bring any IDF, any personnel or anything. So, you know, he said, do you want to go to the West Bank? No one else has even considered this, but you might be nuts enough to do it. And it was funny. I was excited right away. I'm crazy. I'm a little ballsy. So I was like, immediately it intrigued me. But I didn't say yes right away. And I went online and I had a long, well, before that, I even had a longer conversation. I was really confused. I was like, aren't Jews not allowed to go there? And he was like, no, Israelis aren't allowed to go there. I think you could get away with it because your name doesn't sound Jewish at all. My name is Zach Sage Fox. That's my legal name. And it doesn't sound Jewish.
So openly, publicly,
you can people,
you, if yeah. people who are seen as Jews can't yes. go there.
Yeah. It's, you and know. He said, and he's like, I thought about this before pitching it to you. I think you could pass as Greek or Italian. And I was like, oh my God, thank you. it's so fucked up. Everybody is a proud Jew until you say they look Jewish. And then they're like, what are you talking about? My nose is fine. So I really literally like went home that night and I literally spent the night like looking up pictures of Italians. Like, I was like, maybe I could pass for this. But the thing that really made me do it was I started going online, and besides one video from Barry Weiss, I couldn't find any journalism that had gone into the West Bank. And it had blown my mind because I assumed there wasn't journalists going to the West Bank because they couldn't go to the West Bank. So the second I found out that I could go to the West Bank, I was like, where the fuck is CNN? Where the fuck is MSN? Where are all these people?
Because they know the story they will find don't want to tell that story.
They don't want to tell the story. So I was like, what the hell? And I was like, I really got so angry. The second because I didn't know. I really was under the impression that most people have come up to me like, how did you get into the West Bank? And the answer is any American can go to the West Bank. Like, you know, it's not like safe there. But first of all, if you're CNN, you can go with bodyguards. You can go and make sure you're safe. I'm a one man. I'm going there by myself. And so just the more angry I got at journalists, and I've been furious at journalists throughout the year. I swear to God, Fox News is one of the only people that even cover anti-Semitism. And I give them mad kudos for that.
Which is also insane because I don't believe you would give Fox News mad kudos for other stuff.
Yeah, but I'll give them credit for this.
Yeah, because no one's
fantastic. Yeah. And by the way, I don't think it's a ratings booster for them. Like, I don't think they're doing this because it's juicy ratings. I think they're doing this because they know this is a very important story to cover and that it's awful what's happening.
And no one else is covering it.
Oh my God, I've spoken to like Dana Perea. They're amazing, these guys. Like, they really are on our side for it. I don't think many of their hosts are Jewish. I think they really just see they see our strife and they see how screwed up it is.
So you go into Ramallah.
So I decided to do it. I didn't tell anyone. I told my business partner, I told Omri that I was going, and Omri tried to convince me not to do it. And this is the guy who's made his entire career off telling me to do crazy shit. Like, that moment, I kept thinking about, we had a video one time where when the Eagles won the Super Bowl, we're both from Philly, we did a video where I dressed as Ben Franklin and went on the streets, you know, did man on the streets of him in Philly at the Super Bowl parade. And he convinced me to jump off a roof into a big crowd's arms. I'm like, if he convinced me to do that for a video, if he's telling me not to do this, everybody's going to tell me not to do this. So I didn't tell my family. I kept it a secret because I didn't even tell our donors for any of these campaigns. I didn't tell any of the nonprofits that were funding our stuff. I knew they would all say hard no and convince me not to do it. And I just really felt it was important. I really did. And I had read polls about this Hamas support. There was, I think, two big surveys that had come out. I'm assuming they were phone surveys, but, you know, some polls that had come out that said rampant support for Hamas there. But when you looked it up, there was no clear narrative because nobody had gone there. And so I just was like, fuck it. If God wants me to come out of this alive, then I'll come out of this alive. I just felt like it was the right thing to do.
Yeah.
And so I did it, and shit hit the fan pretty quickly. I secured one long form interview that we're still going to release. I've just been easing it, you know, sort of dosing all my Israel content out, especially, you know, I'm not going to go back to the West Bank. I would go there to shoot something if I had a bigger crew and bigger security, but I would never go to shoestring like I just did again. But yeah, I felt like too, I wasn't famous enough yet. That West Bank video made me super.
But what did you see?
Okay, so the second we get there, so the first thing, my producer had secured a private interview with a former alleged terrorist, whatever you want to call them. He says he's not a terrorist, the IDF, but he'd been in prison for over a decade and arrested four different times throughout his life. So clearly the IDF thinks he's a terrorist. I'm saying he's an alleged terrorist because I want to try to, he says he's not, and they say he is, let's say alleged. Let's say that's a fair word here to use, benefit of the doubt. So I sit down with him, and right off the bat, a huge supporter of Hamas. And I was surprised because the producer had teed this up as, hey, this is a, I want you to interview I don't know if it was her friend or if it was just a guy she knew, but there's a man I want you to interview. He has a master's degree. He's very well educated. He speaks fluent English. He's been out of Ramallah. You know, he's a very worldly person. And so I'm thinking, okay, so I'm going to sit with somebody who's pretty moderate. This will be a great conversation. And he was like diehard Hamas supporter. You see him in that first video. He's the guy sitting at the down. We're in a secure location compared to being on the streets for that one. And we're releasing again a much longer version of that. But wild support for Hamas right away. Like, it was no doubt, like, he loved Hamas. The second I was like, this was presented to me as the moderate, I felt like I was in for, I don't know if it was a surprise, but I was like, these polls might totally be right. Like, we'll see. I mean, my hope was to break bread and find some people who didn't like Hamas. This was probably the hardest video for me to release. You know, I try to sow some joy. Like, there's a video I did recently where, like, the Palestinian girl comes to me. This was in the States. And you know, we didn't agree on a lot of stuff. But, like, we end up hugging at the end. Like, if I have that moment, it's in there. Like, I'm not trying to shield.
So you're not. So because some people look at your videos and they might blame you for, like, you're looking for gotcha moments. You're, like, you're interviewing, like, 100 people. You go out the full day. And then you're going to show me the 5-10 most stupid Americans or most stupid. You know.
No, and there's good moments. I put them in. I try to. Yeah. This is like, but that West Bank woman. So, okay. So I go and interview this guy. You know, he's telling. And by the way, right off the bat, Hamas hasn't killed anyone except for, you know, Hamas didn't kill any innocent civilian. You know, right off the bat, we're in la la land. And I got a glimpse of his phone at one point, you know, just when he was on his phone scrolling through. I don't know if it was Facebook or Instagram, but you can see, again, it's an algorithm problem. He's got all this pro-Putin stuff on his stuff. Like, you know, it just goes to show you how interconnected this all is with the access of evil. It's like there really are forces in the internet and in the algorithms that are really trying to push minds in a certain direction. But, you know, he really didn't believe anything. And this was, by the way, it's a great interview. I don't know if it'll be out when this comes out, but it's a great interview because clearly, we disagree on everything. I mean, this guy's like a Hamas stan, but, you know, we have a civil conversation. I'm able to really understand his mindset a little bit more. And it's really just a matter of being brainwashed. I mean, I didn't sense like evil in this guy's heart. I just sense complete a lifetime of being brainwashed to hate Jews. And so we do that interview and then we hit the streets and shit hit the fan quick. Like, I think we were four interviews. We're not there long. And everybody loves Hamas. Like, you see that video, loves Hamas. I included every person I had I put in that video because we didn't get that much. We were only out for a little bit until eventually a group of Palestinian men, and I've told this story many times now, group of Palestinian men come over and they're very upset we're interviewing a woman and she shouldn't be speaking and giving her opinion. And, you know.
They're upset about you having a woman without a hijab on camera?
No, the woman I interviewed has seen this video yet.
Yeah, I mean.
So anyway, so they make us delete this.
They're just upset that you're putting a woman in front of the camera.
And we're asking questions in general. They're also just upset we're asking questions. They're so not used to. By the way, it was.
So now you wonder why journalists like CNN don't go into the West Bank.
But whatever, I went there without security. If you're CNN, you can go there with like 20 bodyguards. Like, where else is their money going towards, you know? So, yeah.
We know where it's going
to. Jake Tapper, what's up? Okay, so anyway, but the point is, so then, yeah, so they, and they really, and it just goes to show you how quickly they escalate. Keep in mind, I've been running around with a microphone and a camera since I was 13, 14 years old. I'm 30. I've been doing this for about 16, 17 years. I've never had anyone in the States. I've gone to other countries and made videos. I've never had death threats like right up to my face just for asking questions that quickly.
What was the questions you asked that were so controversial?
So what's amazing is you'll see it. So this is a crazy story. This is, you want to believe in God. This is a moment where I don't know how else to look at this God. My business partner's like, it's IT, but so, okay. So they basically, they, after the interview, they come in the middle of the interview and they make us shut the cameras off. And then they start telling us, they're very upset. We interviewed a woman and where's our heart and where are you from, the States and everything. And immediately it starts, you have to delete the footage. You have to delete all your footage. And my trans, some of it they're speaking in English, but mostly a lot of it's in Arabic. And my translator's going back. And it was this one guy, and then he brought over more.
Who are these people? Do you, just random people, or do you think they are?
I don't know. I have no clue. So okay, so they're there, and then and it just goes to show you how like they're so not used. Like they're not. They're this is not an open society. Like there's no. They're not used to anybody coming in and questioning their bubble. You know, like they're not used to people just asking questions about anything. You know, they really are indoctrinated into this like Jews are evil. They all have horns, and if you and no one's told them otherwise. And so anyway, so they make us delete a bunch of it. At first, I pushed off. It was like a horrific episode of Curb. They're like, you know, my producer's like, you have to delete the footage. And I was like, nah, I'm okay. And, you know, and they're like, no, they're saying they're going to like hurt us if we don't delete the footage. I'm like, ah, you know, it's my footage. You know, we're not going to delete it. No, thank you. That's very nice of you. Like, I'm going to keep my footage to myself. And then my cameraman tells me they're threatening to kill us if we don't delete the footage. So at that point, I'm like, well, I'm not going to risk these people's lives. These are, I'm an idiot taking a risk here, but these people, you know, live here and whatever. So luckily, we're able to delete just what they could see on the one card. So we deleted four videos that was on the one screen. The main interview with that girl was deleted, and then three of our intro takes. But luckily, we still had a good intro, and probably, you know, the intro you saw with me walking inside, we lost a couple other outtakes of that one. But we left and I was very frustrated. We literally got like chased out. We ran to our car. And my producer said she's never seen anything like that before. And I was like, why? And she's like, I guess I've brought in journalists here in the past, but like, you know, the BBC and I brought in CNN before 10/7. But when they come, they're not asking very serious questions. I asked them real quick, like, what do you think about Jews? Like real questions. Like, what do you think about Hamas? Like, it just goes to show that the journalists that have even gone, they haven't asked actual questions to these people. They're asking what they want to hear. How do you feel about, you know, the children of Gaza? They're not asking anything.
Which are, by the way, those are important questions. That's all they're asking. But it's only half the questions.
It's half the story. Exactly. So very quickly, you saw what happens when you're actually penetrating these people with legit questions. So the crazy thing is then I get home that night, I post about what had happened, and luckily I still had the interviews you saw that came out in that video. I had enough to kind of show the story, but I was very frustrated that I had to delete that interview with that girl, particularly because she gave me her full consent. Every interview I started off, hey, if there's any question you do not want to answer, just ask me to skip it. No worries. You know what I mean? They knew exactly, besides being Jewish, and I didn't say I was Jewish. Besides that, I was just exactly honest. I said, I'm an American influencer named Zach. I'm just asking questions about the war, you know, and politics and news. I was very straightforward about what I was going to ask. So I posted that night that what had happened, and some people started DMing me, and I posted it because I thought it was important to tell what had happened, but I didn't think there was a solution to it. And then some people started DMing me that night and just saying like, hey, it's rare, but sometimes big IT firms, data, cyber hackers, they can retrieve something deleted back. I'd never heard of this before. I'd never been in a situation. So I'm like, what are you talking about? Like, and then I start getting on the phone with some of these big IT companies. And apparently when you delete something, it's actually on an SD card. You know, keep in mind, this wasn't like an iPhone where it goes into the cloud. It was on an SD card. Apparently when you delete something, it's really broken into a bajillion pieces. And really, really smart, amazing people can put that back together. And so, it's crazy, man. First of all, I didn't believe in God until 10 seconds. But I've really felt with everything that's happened to me this year, this was the one thing in my career I didn't ask for any of this. You know, I've always asked for success and fruitfulness, but I didn't ask for any of this. I'm like the face of this whole thing.
So wait. You can't just drop that. You started believing in God after 10/7?
We'll talk about it after. Remind me to ask.
Okay.
Yeah. The second I heard that there was such a thing as data retrieval like that, I don't know what the hell it was, but I felt that night, I said, God wanted that story to happen. And he's going to give me this footage back. I really felt it. And there's no other way to talk about belief in God than a feeling, because it's not so logical. But I felt that I was going to get that footage back. So I go to this big IT firm. They have it. 3 weeks later, I get the call. So sorry, man. We did everything we could. Couldn't get anything. Damn. All right. I guess God didn't want me to have it, whatever. Then somebody reaches out to me who is like a former IDF guy. He reaches out to me and he's like, hey, man, you know, sometimes those big companies, I saw your story, sometimes those big companies just won't give it the care that an individual will. I'll do this for free. I just want to help you. Your story was so compelling to me. Send me the SD card. I was like, I'm not getting my hopes up. Whatever. I send the card. The video hadn't come out yet. I was like, for some reason, he finds it great. But like at that point, I wasn't expecting it. He comes back with an image of the interview with that girl, just an image of it. And I'm just like, oh, this is even worse because now I can see it. It's like, oh, yeah. I remember what it was like and I don't have it. Whatever. I'm like, the video comes out. It obviously makes a massive impact. And it only made that big of an impact. I'll give myself credit to an extent. I think the doing it like the Wild West, I think that was an element that really added to it.
But the Wild West Bank.
Yeah, Wild West Bank. I had that idea immediately. But it went viral because journalists aren't doing their job. Let's just be honest. I'm only going to give myself so much credit. It went viral because I was the first person to actually go and fucking understand what was happening there. Yeah. And I shouldn't have been the first person to do that in June, like 8-9 months after 10/7. So anyway, so I go, the video's already out already. I forgot about the deleted, whatever. It was a story I talked about on the news. I felt like it was important for people to know. I didn't just go there and everybody was opening with wide arms. It was like hell right off the bat. And then I had one other person reach out to me and another one of these IT companies, and I don't want to give too much. It was kind of secretive. They didn't even want me to know who they were. It was really specific. They gave me like a fake address to send it to, and it was very sketchy. But at this point, I'm like, the video is out. What do I do? So I sent the SD card to this address, some random address in Illinois. I still don't know who did this. It's like, was very secretive. I got this random, they was randomly reached out to. And at this point, I'm like, I have nothing to lose. I don't need the SD card anymore. If I send it, I never get it back. Whatever. I send it. And a week later, I get an email with probably 2/3 of that interview. Wow. Fully back in HD. Not all of it, but I probably.
So you're like.
I got about 15.
You're like, God is great, but he has bad timing.
I think he wanted this to be a separate video. I'm releasing it next week. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. Yeah, sliced up. Some of it's a little repetitive. I try not to have it. It's like you want things to be short, long enough. You don't want it. But yeah, I'm releasing next week. The craziest thing you'll see on the video, I don't remember what it was. I thought my cameraman turned it off the second the men started coming us. We have on camera them telling us to cut the camera off and screaming at us, who are you? Where are you from? You know, you see the tension happening before the camera gets cut off. You see it.
Wow.
It's in there. I didn't realize that until I re-looked at the footage. I forgot that that was captured on camera. I didn't know when my cameraman stopped filming. So you see where this all starts. You see it's really crazy. So
I can't wait to see
that. I don't know any other explanation except for I got that footage 3 months after it came out. And I don't know. I wouldn't say she's similar tonally to that one girl you saw in the video, maybe a little more scathing, but just you see, it's important because you're getting into their mindset. I don't think there's anything special about this girl that you're going to see. I think she's an engineer, you know, I don't know her name. I don't know anything about her, but she says she's an engineer. She also has a master's degree. The biggest love for Hamas you've ever seen. She says in this video, and it'll probably be out by the time this comes out. So probably cut around this if it's out already. But she says in the thing, she was super, I think I'm quoting her right, super satisfied seeing all the videos Hamas took on October 7th.
Wow.
And this is an educated engineer in Ramallah with a master's degree. Like, you know, I don't know what else to say except for these people have been so indoctrinated with hate. And part of the problem is, and it's like, I still find room in my heart for them because I feel bad for these kids that were born into this. Like, she's like talking about 1948, like it's part of her story and that she's a refugee. And, you know, and then I start asking a question, where do you live? She lives in a nice house. She's wearing like designer clothing. She's an engineer. She's not what you think of a refugee. And her grandparents were refugees, but she's still a refugee because of Irnwa's decisions to, you know,
the UN's decision.
Yeah, the UN's. Right. Yeah, but they have a special exemption. And you just feel, listen, maybe that's why I'm not so angry in my videos, because I don't think people are born evil. I don't think this girl was, I think she could have been born into a totally different society and had a much better life where she wasn't stuck in the past and she was able to look at the future. But you'll see in the video, they don't want peace. Like the word peace, when I even mention the word peace, you see she got to be like, no, we don't want peace, no peace.
Wow.
Not even, you know, obviously I get into her with the two-state, one state, they don't want a two-state, but let's talk about, there could be 5 states. It doesn't, they don't want peace. And that's really important for people to understand the Kamala Harris's, the Bidens of the world, because it doesn't mean that a two-state solution is not possible. But it's clearly not possible today. And so then we have to work towards steps to get there. And just leaving Gaza and just letting them control the education system with the UN clearly led to 10-7. So we have proof now that societies can change. I really believe that one day Jews and Israelis can live side by side in peace. I have no doubt. But there has to be massive reform to the education system. And I think the Wild West Bank showed that one. You know, when I'm bringing up things, facts, these guys also, they look like the kids in Washington Square Park where they just, they ain't heard of any of this stuff. Like they're being suffocated from reality. And I say this more and more every day because it's true. I pray for the kids born into the Palestinian territories, whatever you want to call it, Gaza, the West Bank. I pray for the children born into that society the same way I pray for the children born into all of these Middle Eastern countries, not all of them, but the ones where, like Afghanistan, where they are literally born and they're getting, you know, sent away to be wives at 9 years old. And it's all this terrible Sharia law that has influenced these territories. And if you're a kid born into that society, you don't ever get to have a free life. You don't have freedom of thought. So when everybody's talking about free Palestine, I'm on board too, but freedom from Hamas, freedom of thought, you know, because it's not fair to these people. Again, a lot of these people I interviewed in the West Bank, I don't think they're evil. They're indoctrinated. I mean, obviously there's a discussion between what's the difference, but.
So from Gaza to Washington Square Park.
The West Bank.
Or from West Bank. Yeah, sorry, yeah. From West Bank.
So many people keep going up to me. They think I went to Gaza. Yeah.
No, you will. I talking with you, I feel like I'm going to see like a video of you walking around Rafah in the tunnels, you know.
Yeah.
But from the West Bank to Washington Square Park, you've made a lot of videos exposing the stupidity, the indoctrination, the brainwashing in the past 11 months. Top three.
Of my videos?
Yeah.
Ooh, Gaza graduation was awesome. Like, obviously, graduation. That was crazy. That one played in Congress at, like, I don't know if you knew that. At, like, they literally played that in the anti-Semitism hearings. I was, like, on the toilet, literally, and all of a sudden my phone starts blowing up, and they're like, your video's in Congress. I was like, what? And they used it as, like, real evidence. Like, they actually used it. They played it for the three presidents. It was the one in
the Northwestern the
spring.
Guy.
Yeah, yeah, I think it was Northwestern. What were the other ones that spring? I think UCLA maybe was one.
I'm still looking for the righteous one, so I don't even care about.
But it was the one in the spring, not the one that was known, but not like with Harvard and those people. It was the later one. They played it for them, and they made them comment on it as what this is what's happening with college students. They made them comment on it. That was such a rewarding experience because it was just like, wow, these interviews I'm doing literally with a microphone, dressing up in silly costumes to try to get the facts out there about what's really happening on the ground with young people. It was wild to see how much of an impact that was. So that one was
Gaza graduation.
That one was obviously Wild West Bank. The reaction to that was insane. And I would say, I mean, that one skyrocketed my following, but I would say the thing that was the most beautiful about it was just getting DMs, and I've gotten them, I get them all the time now, but I get way more DMs about love than hate. I don't know if the Jew haters are afraid to come to me, but I don't get too many death threats or too many hate things.
Okay, I can forward you some of mine.
Yeah, I get them. I'm not saying I don't, but mostly I get bombarded with love and just people all around the world who are seeing this stuff, and it is informational to them. I've had people that I've been shocked who are very liberal that I know would not stand with Israel that have come up to me after seeing like the West Bank one. And they've been like, that changed my perspective on this war. I'm not anti-Palestinian now, but I have a lot more sympathy for what Israel, especially I did that video too. When I also, I went right after I paid my camera crew to stay longer, right after we got back from the West Bank, I went straight to within the same day. I went straight to, and I had another big video where I went to the Israelis and asked them the exact same questions that I asked. Because I thought that was really important too, to see the difference. And you saw it wasn't like day and night, but it was pretty close. It was like Israelis all one piece in some form or the other, them saying they have all this love in their hearts. And like, I'm not selectively editing it. That was reality. So I think that was really impactful in that one. And then maybe this frat one that just came out, that was wild. Like that one just came out.
When
that
you
was,
got people enrolling into a Hamas frat.
Yeah. It was wild. I don't know if fun's the right word. I'm a comedian. I like playing characters. And I got to do that with Ekeel Jacobs, who's just another warrior. And he is so brave and funny. So that was another really amazing collab. That one was really fun to do. that was like, we were so in character and we were just so hyped up. Like, I think me and Yakil, like, we like really got into the characters. Like, there were moments where we were just like, oh, dude, fuck the Jews, like off camera. Like, it just like, because we were just like having fun exposing anti-Semitism, which was like, it sounds weird, but it was like, you know what, dude, these anti-Semites have made our lives so shitty this year. If we can have some joy in exposing it, then like, then that's awesome, man. Like, yeah, it was a fun experience and it was a pleasure to work with somebody like him.
All right, before we end, I want to ask you a question. What's your dream video?
Do you want to ask about the God thing, by the way?
Oh, yes.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Let's, so you, yes, you mentioned finding God, I guess, after yeah. October 7th.
Yeah.
Tell me more.
Yeah, I'll tell
you know,
an
that's not, a lot, I've heard people like saying, I've lost God or my belief has been shaken.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I've never heard of that.
Here's my journey. It's interesting. So I went to state school my whole life. My dad's pretty religious. My mom's not so religious, but like, she's a Jew. I did ancestry.com like 100% Ashkenazi, like literally 100.00 Eastern European Jewish. So I'm as Jewish genetically as they come.
Look, people that are listening might not, you know, have, but I'm not shocked. I'm standing, like, I haven't done ancestry. I'm probably 110%.
I'm as Jewish genetically as a person could be. I'd always struggled with the God thing. Like, to me, atheism seemed crazier than believing because it's like they're both definitive. And so the idea of being like, well, God's definitely not real. Like, I'm just look above at the stars. And the more you study science, the more I'm like, obviously there's something bigger than we understand. So to say there's no such thing as God is preposterous. So I always felt that.
You should know I'm an atheist.
Good for you. We can talk about it. It's crazy. How can you look up at this? Have you ever studied the concept of infinity, by the way?
I've given it a lot of thought,
more I study science, the more I'm like, there's no way there's not a God. Like, there has to, this is too much we don't understand. And when you understand the fact, infinity is a crazy concept. That really was also made me more believe too. Because it's like, when you start understanding the concept of infinity, that nothing, everything's expanding above us and never ends. And even getting into your cells, like there are things where once you even have like a cell, things go further and further in. So you're just like, if everything's ever expanding, there has to be way more than we know about. Anyway, but my belief in God came. So this is interesting. So running a production company, 2023 was a rough year for us. Like, we did okay. I wouldn't say we had like a major loss in 2023, but keep in mind, we're a film and television company. So those two writer strikes really, really kicked us in the ass. Those were really, you know, it was the writer strike, then the actor strike. Hollywood was shut down. And when Hollywood shuts down, Hollywood, like those ripple effects, we're still seeing today in the industry. So it was a really bad year for entertainment. I don't think anybody crushed it in 2023. And so we had had a rough year. It was harder to keep employees and to not fire people. It's really hard for us. And that fall particularly was, you know, there still hadn't been a resolution. It was just not great. So we had lost a big commercial contract that I was pretty confident we were going to get, and we lost it. And it just never happened. And it was like a lot of money, and it would have just been a nice little glimmer of hope in a tough year. And I decided to stay in. This happened on a Friday at like, you know, 6 p.m. I got the call that it wasn't going through. And I was really sad. And I don't get sad that often, but I was just like, you know what? I got to take care of my mental health. I'm going to stay in and smoke weed and, like, you know, watch South Park or something. And just, you know, so I took a night to just be sad and eat ice cream. And my mom calls me and is like, hey, do you want to talk to my friend who's this like really devout Christian? And she'll give you some things about faith, because I was feeling a little faithless. And I was like, what do I have to lose? I'll talk to my mom's friend. What do I have to, like, I'm just sitting here crying, eating ice cream. Like, I wasn't actually crying, but it was very sad. So I get on the phone with my mom's friend. And she's, by the way, I didn't understand exactly, a huge Zionist, big, huge supporter of the Jews, but just like a Christian. And she was just giving me advice about God and, you know, how to feel when things don't go your way. And there's always a bigger plan. And she told me something that night that I had never thought of before. She said, do you pray? And I was like, yeah, I pray. And she's like, how do you pray? And I was like, well, you know, I ask God for this and this. She's like, well, God's not Santa. try praying where, rather than saying what you want and putting together a wish list, ask God to guide you. Ask him to show you what he wants to do. And she said so specifically, I want you to try tonight to ask God to say, hey, I didn't get this big toy company contract. You must have something that you want me to be spending my time doing that's more important than that. And I said, fuck it. What do I have to lose? I'll try praying the way this woman wants. What do I have to lose? And it's funny, she wasn't even Jewish. She was a Christian person. And that night, and when I say night, we're talking already probably 1 a.m. before I went to bed, October 7th. I try that. And I spent about 20 minutes before I went to bed. And I really just tried it her way. And I just sat and I was just like, God, guide me. And I never prayed like that before in my life. I always asked for things. I thought God was Santa. But I always asked for things. And I tried it this way. And I just said, God, guide me. And I said, exactly. You said, what do you want me to be doing that's more important with my time? You obviously have a different plan for me. I tried her way. Wake up that morning. It's, you know, everybody's finding out what had happened in Israel. And everything that has happened in my life in the last year, I don't know how to explain it except for feeling like I was put in a position to do exactly what I had been meant to do my entire life. You know, like I've asked for so many things in my life, in my career, and often those things don't work out. Sometimes they do. But, you know, having dreams is tough. You're constantly heartbroken when you have big dreams. And I didn't ask to be an activist. It wasn't on my list. I didn't think anti-Semitism was as bad as clearly it is. I was sort of asleep at the wheel. And I didn't, you know, I didn't seek out this opportunity. And it's been the most meaningful, important year of my life. And every opportunity has just come to me. And that's how I pray now. I spent the whole year now. I changed my whole outlook. And I'm not religious. Like, I like pagan. You know, I ain't saving it for marriage. I'm a fun Jew. But, you know, like, I really believe in God. I can't think of any other reason why I'd be here. And keep in mind, the thing I'm now getting the most famous for and having the most impact in my entire life is running around with a microphone. This is what I started doing when I was 13 years old. I started doing stand-up and then running around with these videos. So it's like, I've been building this skill set, you know, for 17 years. That's why I'm good at what I do. Like, there's nothing except for repetition. I've just been doing and doing. If you look at videos when I was 14, I sucked. Like, you know what I mean? Like, it was funny probably to myself, but... And I'd been went to Jewish day school, so I know about Israel. I know facts. I study political communications at Penn. Like, I don't know how to explain the feeling I've had except for destiny.
It's beautiful. That's a beautiful. It's a really beautiful. And even though I don't believe in God, I don't believe that a God exists.
Yeah.
And or gods, it doesn't matter. I can connect to that feeling. Yeah. I can connect to that experience.
You don't feel a sense of destiny?
I feel that everything that I have been doing all my life has prepared me for this exact moment. I'm a professor, so I know how to take a lot of information and crystallize it. I know how to speak in front of people. I have been on many podcasts to talk about my research. All of a sudden, I'm talking about other stuff. I am... always been obsessed with Jewish history and especially the Holocaust.
Me too.
I come from a very Zionist family. Like, all of these things have prepared me for this exact moment.
You don't see that as destiny?
That's the only difference. I see this as craziness, random craziness. And
really?
I'm just glad that I was able to capture, and instead of asking, why me? Or why this? Okay, what now?
I hope you open your heart to God. I don't know. Yeah. I'm not going to sell you on God. It's a feel. It really is a feeling. It's not a fact. Like, so there's no other way. But you, out of anybody I know, first of all, I didn't know who you were a year ago, and now you're like one of my heroes. Like,
that's an interesting thing. And I'm actually, my goal, part of my goal in fighting for Jewish civil rights is pitching the biggest tent possible. And part of that is showing secular Jews and Jews that are atheist Jews that you can be very Jewish.
Yeah.
You can read the Jewish texts. You can celebrate the holidays. You can do Kiddush. Yeah. You don't have to believe in God to be Jewish. Yeah. Don't exclude yourself.
Yeah, you don't. But your strength is coming from somewhere. And it's not random.
As long as I'm strong, I don't care where it's coming. All right, so I like to finish the show with what I call a Jewish lightning round.
Oh, no.
I think you'd be good about this because this is very quick.
See, it's my 8 years of Jewish day school put to the test.
A series of questions. There are no right or wrong answer. You just tell me what comes to heart. You get one pass, and I get to decide whether you get that pass.
Okay.
Zach Sage Fox, what is one thing people don't know about you?
What don't people know about me? I already said I had an eating disorder.
When was your first kiss?
Like, I talk about that all the time. My first kiss was literally at Fat Camp. I wasn't even kidding. At Fat Camp, spin the bottle. Yeah.
What is one thing people don't know about the Jews?
Ooh, one thing people don't know about the Jews. That's a really good question. That when we talk about how, you know, there's a reason Jews are so smart, and it's not like genetically we're smarter or anything. It doesn't come from anything like that. I think that part of Jews being so smart and being, you know, we're the number one like Nobel Peace winning race out there. And so much of that isn't because of our genes, but it's because of the culture of studying Talmud over thousands and thousands of years. And that, especially in the last couple hundred years, Jews literally weren't allowed to have the jobs that paid well. We were stuck with the academic, scholarly kind of jobs. Those were the jobs people didn't want. And so we really, really were just, you know, over time put in a position to become scholarly. And I think so much of Jews being linked to success and intelligence really comes from a culture of persecution. And I think that's something that blows my mind the more I study it.
What is your favorite curse?
Oh, fuck's the best word ever, dude. I fucking love the word fuck. It's such a good word.
When was the last time you cried?
I don't know.
If you could have any person over for Shabbat dinner from any moment in history, who would that be?
Oh, that's so good. Oh my God, there's so many. What a tough decision.
First person comes to mind.
Do I have bodyguards? Probably Hitler. Be like, what the hell?
Hitler for Shabbat dinner.
No, I'd want to grill a guy. What the fuck's wrong with him? No, I'm curious. I'm very interested.
You'll have to be vegan.
Yeah, I'd have to be vegan. Yeah,
because
yeah.
The guy loved animals. Loved that's animals, you know, yeah. Just
probably
not
Hitler
Jews.
Though. I'd grill him, dude. If I had security, Hitler for sure. I'm curious. Like, how do you become that? I think he's the biggest case study of evil we have in our modern day society.
What's your favorite Jewish holiday?
Ooh, I do love the high holidays. I feel like on Rosh Hashanah, I do get particularly high and sit in synagogue. I love smoking a little bit of weed and going to synagogue. I find it to be a very spiritual experience. And I just feel like maybe it's the fact that literally the high holidays have the word high in it. But I do feel like it's an opportunity to come get a little stoned and like reflect on the new year and what you want.
There's a video there that you should be making.
I should.
The high holidays. What's your least favorite Jewish holiday?
It's funny. I feel like everybody probably says Yom Kippur, but like I had an eating disorder. So like Yom Kippur is like a piece of fucking cake for me. Like the easiest thing. Everybody complains all day. I'm like, bro, one day of not eating? Did I do that for 2 years? the worst one? There's no worst one. They're all great. Mm-hmm. Bad one.
When do you
what have other people said about that one?
People have said Yom Kippur, Tisha B'Av. People have said Purim, like they've said anything.
I don't have any negative one because I think there's a, you know.
Passover.
There's every holiday, there's a way to connect with the theme of that holiday. I think so. Even if it's a negative theme, like, I don't mind taking a day on Yom Kippur to repent and think about what I could have done better last year and what I want to do. I don't think there's any holiday that you can't make valuable, even if it's not such a happy, rosy holiday.
When do you feel safest?
I don't feel super safe right now being a Jew in New York, as I'm sure you don't. I feel safe when I'm amongst other Jews right now. Which is scary because, you know, after like that ISIS guy was stopped at the Canadian border, like clearly there are terrorists who want Jews gathered in areas so they can kill us. But I definitely feel the safest when I'm around other Jews right now, particularly.
So when do you feel least safe?
It sucks, man. But walking around the streets of New York where the Jewish start sucks. I was walking to my house the other day and like literally, I mean, I live in Manhattan and I literally, like, a bunch of, like, pro-Pali dudes started screaming Free Palestine at me because I was wearing a Jewish star. Like, just literally because I'm a Jewish star. It's like, this is really happening. This is insane. Like, literally harassing me. And then I left my apartment to go get pizza. And then I came back, and they were still there 20 minutes later. And they kept screaming at me. They were, like, waiting to keep screaming. Like, what is wrong with these motherfuckers?
Yeah. What gives you hope?
That's a good question. I could answer that in a lot of ways. I'm a happy kid. I was a happy kid when I was a kid. And I'm a happy kid as an adult kid. I just think, dude, being alive every day, man, like it's, you just think of the odds of being that sperm that made it to the finish line and fertilized that egg, and you get to be born, and there was no miscarriage, and you didn't have any illnesses, hopefully, if you make it, you know, to adulthood. And I just think every day is a blessing. I don't really, you know, even before I believed in God, I would have said that. I just think we're all so lucky to be alive, and life is so precious, and consciousness is so precious. And, you know, I think being alive every day gives me hope. Yeah.
What is the first thing that comes to mind when you think of the words Jewish civil rights?
Necessary. Yeah, if you told me that a couple years ago, I would have said, don't we already have civil rights? Aren't we already protected? Clearly, I've learned since 10-7 is those laws are all either non-existent or they're incredibly loose. Or they're not being abided by. I don't know how to give it one word, but it is so important. I'm like obsessed with the fact that you're doing this podcast that's really targeting civil rights specifically. You were actually one of the first people I started seeing that was framing it like this. And it gave me clarity because I was like, oh, right, that's what this is, right? You call it Jew hate, you call it anti-Semitism. This is about Jewish civil rights. They're not, you know, if you ran around a college campus and talked about killing black people and getting rid of Africa, that person would be arrested. They certainly would get kicked out of school. You see at Columbia, your own university, these kids are not getting
promoted.
At Columbia,
they get tenure.
That girl who was like, you know, the head of the takeover of the building, you know, who wanted, what did you want, humanitarian aid? Like literally she's a teacher now. You're just like—
In that building,
yeah. It's like a joke. So we're going to have to fight really hard. And the scary thing is we're going to have to fight up against this toxic DEI stuff. Like, again, you're talking to a dude who paints his nails. I'm not some like right-wing conservative. This DEI stuff has taken Jews out of the civil rights conversation, which is insane. I don't think there is any other group of people with unchangeable genetic characteristics in this country and probably around the world, but particularly in this country, I can at least speak about that, that is dealing with the level of hate and persecution that we are having to deal with right now. When we hosted that rally the other day together, I was scared. I hated it. I went up and I had to be strong, but I had so many conversations with security. And the days leading up, I was really scared to be a Jew standing on a platform out in public in front of other Jews. And that sucks. That's insane. I don't know any other group of people that would feel that way in 2024. I know, I'm not saying, you know, this is the pity game and like we're the worst. I know other groups have it bad too, but like what other group has to worry about literally like getting shot just for standing up in public in a progressive city filled with, and I knew if the security was going to be heightened, and I still was a bit nervous.
Yeah, me too. Finally, every episode, I urge the listeners to donate to one charity that does good in Israel or across the Jewish diaspora. Where would you want people to donate to this week?
I think AIPAC's a great one. Honestly, AIPAC has had its name dragged through the mud. They are so bipartisan. I think people think of them as some like right-wing conservative. Like, nope, they literally back Democrats. They back progressives. They back conservatives. Like, they back anyone who stands up not only for Israel, but Western values. And them or Students Against Anti-Semitism, donate to, I mean, there's a lot of amazing groups, but some of these groups are doing really tangible things within the government and within the legal system. And I think those are ones where your money is going directly to the root of the problem, because we have to make sure that our civil rights are protected under the law and that we have people in government on both sides, by the way. It doesn't matter if you're a Republican. I won't judge you for voting Republican or Democrat this election. I see the problem, but make sure you're voting, like you said, as a Jew.
I love the fact that some people would be like, that damn conservatives telling people to donate to AIPAC, not knowing anything about you.
I don't know. Do I look like a conservative? Yeah. do I look with my teacup poodle, my pink? I'm wearing all this.
Where can people find you?
You can find me at Zach Sage on Instagram and TikTok, Zach Sage Fox on X. I just got X. I'm trying to build my X up. I fought Twitter for years. I was like, this is a cesspool of hate, but you know. I mean, now that I'm really, my content is not just about virality, but it's about impact. I caved. So we are on X now too, baby.
So people are used to seeing you in like 90 second videos.
Yeah.
And we have been talking for almost 90 minutes.
I know, man.
Been incredible.
I'm in movies and shows. And so check out my movie, How to Get Girls. You can get it on VOD anywhere. It's a great movie. Nothing to do with Israel. It's just a really funny, dumb teen comedy. And smoke a little weed and watch it with your friends.
I'm going to go and check it out. So here I am with Zach the Age Fox.
Awesome.
Thank
dude,
you so much.
Thank
you so much for having me.
Hi, I'm Michael Greenspan, Shai's father-in-law. I'd like to thank you for listening to the Here I Am podcast with Shai Davidai. Here I Am is recorded at The Cave Production House in Hackensack, New Jersey, and is brought to you in partnership with Abby Sophia and Adamit Productions. You can find us on Instagram, YouTube, and wherever you get your favorite podcasts. I'd also like to extend my deepest gratitude to everyone at Adamit Productions for turning Shai's dream into a reality, and to all our donors and partners for their unwavering commitment to fighting for Jewish civil rights. Most importantly, I'd like to thank you, our listeners. Let's be honest, none of this would have been possible without your support and dedication. Showing up is half the battle. Thank you for showing up. Thank you for being there. Thank you for saying, "Here I am."